Hi, this is Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out the podcast for Connecting Faith. You can hear the show each Monday through Thursday at noon Central. And remember, there are even more shows available on our website, myfaithradio.com.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome to the broadcast. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Neil Stavem. Ryan Nisley, my more than able, capable producer.
Good afternoon, sir.
Is running the controls.
Good to be here.
Grace Reitzel over there taking calls, and we hope that we'll have some calls today as you maybe just share a story with us as we hear a story from Ken Abraham. We'll introduce him in just a moment. We are counting down the days to our spring fundraiser. Today is the... It is the 4th, is it not?
Yes, the calendar. I looked at it and actually confirmed. It is
really?
The 4th day of April today.
Okay. There's probably a reason why you looked at that, but that would probably take up too much time.
I'm not sure what it was anyway.
Okay, all right. So, well, we're 12 days away from our spring fundraiser, and just wanted to remind you of that. And you can find out a little bit more about Faith Radio on our website, myfaithradio.com. Myfaithradio.com. And our spring fundraiser is a time we kind of take care of the remaining need in our budget. So if you would be, and thank you, by the way, for so many who give generously and are fulfilling pledges. And it's just an honor to know that you are standing with us. So we appreciate that a lot and just love to have you on board if you're not. And by the way, Ryan, you and I will be tonight. And for those in the Twin Cities area, at least, we'll be down in the Target Center, Minneapolis, for David Jeremiah.
This is true. It's a big event. They're expecting tens of thousands, literally tens of thousands of human beings.
Wow. So we'll have the Faith Radio booth there and promise not to trip you when you walk by, but we would like you to stop.
So I do have very large feet, but I will make sure that I watch where they go.
All right. So that's probably, I think, all we need to say about that.
Fair enough.
We'll move on to today's discussion. This is a wonderful book. I would say just sort of heartwarming, poignant, gentle, and insightful. Written by best-selling author Ken Abraham. Ken has written a number of books, and he's done a lot of collaborations as well with fascinating high-profile public figures. And so maybe books that you have heard of, "Don't Bite the Apple Till You Check for Worms." I do remember reading that one years ago, I think, talking to Ken about that. "I'm Masking the Myths of Marriage, Stand Up and Fight Back." And he's collaborated with a number of high-profile folks and has been doing a lot of TV and radio and those things. And the latest one that we want to talk about is called "When Your Parent Becomes Your Child. It's a Journey of Faith Through My Mother's Dementia." And it's really a personal story. And Ken, maybe welcome to Connecting Faith, by the way. This is probably a little bit different than what some of the books that you've written in the past.
It really is, Neil. And hey, it's great to be back with you again, too. Thank you so much for having me. The book is different for me because it was a whole lot easier to tell other people's stories. I've gotten in the habit of that, and I've had great fun telling Bill Gaither's story or Buzz Aldrin's story or even tragic stories like 9/11's Lisa Beamer with Let's Roll. I wrote that with her. Chuck Norris was fun to work with. George Foreman, I was cracking up laughing the whole time working with George. But this story, there was a lot to laugh about, but at the same time, there was a lot to cry about, too. And it was my own mom, and it was our story, our family. So it was a little different writing this book, I have to admit.
Your mom was loved the Lord, and so you grew up in a family of faith. So maybe just talk a little bit about her influence in your life, explain her a little bit.
She did love the Lord, I'll say that. And boy, she quoted the Bible to us and taught us the Bible. She had three boys. Now, here's the difficult part, though. My dad was not a Christian for most of my early life. My dad owned the biggest bar in the county. It wasn't a fancy lounge or anything like that. It was a coal mining factory workers kind of bar where he would have the guys drinks on the bar whenever they came in early in the morning at 7 o'clock in the morning. And they're pretty much regular customers. But he owned the biggest bar in the county, but he was also the biggest customer of the biggest bar in the county as well. He drank a lot. And my mom would pray for him every day. And she'd have us boys pray for dad, And she prayed for my dad for 38 years, Neil. And finally, he became a Christian in a youth concert that my brothers and I were performing at in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, back in the early 80s, and changed my whole family around. And boy, it was just amazing the change that came over our family once Dad became a Christian, once he came to know Christ. Wow, and things that had never happened before in my family. People actually were talking to each other. I mean, Mom and Dad actually saying they loved each other. It was a whole different family. So that was the family, and Mom played piano in our little church in Clymer, Pennsylvania, not too far from Pittsburgh, about an hour outside of Pittsburgh, hour and a half or so. And she played piano in that little church. She knew every hymn by heart. She didn't use music. She played by heart, and she could play music by the music. She knew she was a good concert violinist, that sort of thing. But she just loved to rip into the piano and let her go, and boy, she did. So that was kind of my growing up, and as it got along the way, where Mom began to develop some of these signs of dementia. I was going to say sickness. It's really more of a mental type of a situation. It's not even an illness. It's a condition, really. But she began to lose a little bit of her faculties. Her acuity, her mental acuity, kind of went out the window. She would become forgetful and all that. But she always maintained that spiritual sense. And all the way to the very end, she continued to love Jesus. And that's what her life was all about.
We're going to kind of circle back to that, because we want to talk about how we can maintain that spiritual perspective in the midst of this. But I'm interested in knowing if you were, I think, were you in the same town as your mom? So, was she in the Nashville area? So, or
no, I live in Nashville, Tennessee, okay. In Franklin, Tennessee, actually, just outside of Nashville. And my mom was in Pennsylvania for most of my life. She lived there. And then as her condition began to get to the place where we were a little bit afraid to have her living by herself, we moved her to Florida. Orlando, Florida is where my brothers live. And so we moved her down to be close to the family down there. But she was still living on her own and driving a car and having a good time, going to church, and pretty much functioning just as she had back in Pennsylvania, only she wasn't driving through, you know, 2 feet of snow to get to work every morning, which she wanted to do right into her early 80s. She wanted to continue to be active in the community and the church, and she took a job as a greeter at Walmart, which my brothers were totally embarrassed about, but the folks at Walmart were marvelous and just wonderful to my mom, and she loved everybody that came into Walmart. She would hug them. So she was probably one of the most popular greeters that Walmart had in our little area there in Pennsylvania.
There's a lot of us guys who were thinking that's probably our retirement plan there.
Hey, so you know what? Sort of I've been looking at that myself.
Well, Ken, tell me about, were there some, when did you suspect that maybe dementia was afflicting to the point where you said, you know, we need to start making some changes here?
When she started repeating herself a lot, that was one of the things. She started telling the same story over and over again. And you'd say, okay, Mom, I knew that. And she would tell us again. Or even when we did move her down to Florida, I was living in Nashville, she would call. And she would call not just once. She'd call 5, 10, 15 times a day. And basically the same message over and over again. Or she'd forget things. She would lose her cell phone. We got her a cell phone just to keep with her all the time, just in case she needed us right away. And of course, she would lose that cell phone almost about every week. Somebody would have to go find the cell phone. And she was still driving a car. That was the scary part, Neil. She was still out there in the traffic of Orlando, making her way through the 5, 6, 7, 8 lanes of traffic. She was still driving a car. And we noticed that she wasn't able to get to the brakes as quickly. She wasn't able to catch the traffic lights as quickly, things like that. And you say, this is too dangerous. We just can't do this anymore. Forgetfulness, suspicions. She was really afraid. Mom was just afraid that there was somebody trying to break into our apartment all the time. And my mom, you have to understand, growing up, especially with my dad not being a Christian, Mom had to take the lead in our family in a lot of ways. She was an independent, strong woman. And for her to have that kind of fear was totally a whole new experience for us as family members. And yet she was afraid. She was afraid to be by herself. She was afraid that somebody was trying to break in her door at night. She would literally put chairs up against her door at night because she was afraid that somebody was trying to break into her apartment, which, of course, they never were. Those kind of things began to show up. What really took us by surprise was when my mom began to use some words that we had never heard in our family, except maybe coming from my dad. When she started to use some profanity, I mean, we're talking about a lady that knew scripture, could quote scripture, could sing every hymn in the book, play it by heart. And there were some words that came out of my mom. I don't think I've ever heard you say that before, Mom. That wasn't my mom speaking. That was the dementia speaking through my mom, Neil. Just a totally different kind of thing.
Well, and maybe we should take a moment to define that. I was thinking, though, you're talking about losing your cell phone. There's probably, you know, a lot of people listening right now say, well, I didn't think that was a sign, but I do have that malady. But so were they, let's define what, as you've written about it, you've obviously did a little research and study about it and
sure.
talked with a number of doctors as you walked through this with your mother. But give us a little sense about what this really, there isn't really a clear definition, is there?
Well, dementia is kind of a catch-all term, and there are various kinds of dementia. Alzheimer's disease is probably the most familiar. That's the one that people know about, and frankly, I didn't even know about that whenever we started walking with my mom into this whole thing. I just thought that sort of thing happened to somebody else. I didn't even know what it was. Dementia, that sounded like almost an obscene word to me. What is that? Are people crazy or what? And the truth is, what it is, it's a basic mental illness where the brain has had some kind of catastrophic incident where it may be a stroke, it may be something else, a little mini stroke, ischemic type of strokes, where it causes the brain not to function as it used to. And memory is one of the areas, of course, that's the first to go. There's a lot of research nowadays with beta amyloid and all that sort of thing, this kind of sticky, gooey substance in your brain that messes up the neurons and all that. And I'm not a doctor, so I can't explain all that. All I know is it causes memory loss, and it's so sad because, like with my mom, she couldn't remember some of her best friends. She couldn't remember sometimes she couldn't even remember family members. And you see this person who's so vital for so long, and suddenly as we get older, I have trouble remembering what street I live on sometimes, and we all have a little bit of that. You're losing your car keys and can't find your glasses, but when it's every day. And you start seeing it again and again. Those are warning signs, and you've got to take those seriously. That confusion over a time or place and dates and can't remember who's the president of the United States and that sort of thing, what town you live in, boy, you've got to get some help in a hurry. And that's what we began to see with my mom.
We're going to take a break in a moment, but I want to ask you about, you talk about warning signs. Were there some signs that you missed or that, you looking back, you wish you would have maybe picked up something sooner? And what made a difference?
Truthfully, we missed them all. We missed them for a couple of reasons, Neil. First of all, we missed them because I was living in denial. I just thought my mom's just getting old. She's into her 80s, and, things happen. And she's always been a little bit quirky anyhow and a fun lady and quick sense of humor. And so she would do some crazy things. So I just thought she was just getting old. So I missed it totally, and so did my brothers. My two brothers, would experience the same kinds of things I would. But when she started to visit us in Nashville, the fear thing really was something I missed totally. She would stay at our house, and she would see little they weren't little. They were big guys. She would see looking in her window at night. And I would go and say, Mom, there's nobody there. But she would hallucinate, and she would see people outside our windows. Now, I live in a house in Franklin, Tennessee. You've got to step up to our house. Our upper level is probably 30 or 40 feet off the ground. And she was seeing people looking in her window. Now, that would be a miracle of biblical proportions right there if that were happening. But that kind of thing, I just missed it. And I just thought, well, she's just old and, she's stubborn. And when, she would see things her way and maybe there was something else going on. I didn't know, but I just totally missed those things as clues to something being really seriously wrong with my mom.
We're going to talk about treatment went on and talk a little bit about Ken and his family, how they kind of came to some of those decisions, getting along with the doctors and medical professionals, and just some good advice and tips and more of the story as we hear it. It's Ken Abraham, my guest today. The book is called When Your Parent Becomes Your Child, The Journey of Faith Through My Mother's Dementia, and it is published by Thomas Nelson. Ken's a best-selling author, and he's former professional musician, also pastored for a while, and we're happy to have him on with us today on Connecting Faith. By the way, you might have a story. You want to just maybe share a little bit about your personal experience, maybe family situation, or even pick up some advice from Ken as he's had a chance to research. We'd love to have you join the conversation. It's 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484, and we'll continue in just a moment. Well, Ken Abraham's mother knew all the old hymns by heart and played the piano and sang them. And there came a time in her senior years when things started to change rather dramatically. And Ken's been sharing his story, and he's written about it in a wonderful book called When Your Parent Becomes Your Child. And it's not only, I guess, descriptive and personal, but there's also some great insight in there as well and some sort of tips along the way as we're talking today a little bit about dealing with, as the subtitle says, A Journey of Faith Through My Mother's Dementia. And Ken, talk a little bit about the relationship you had with your siblings. You said your mother, you'd moved her down to Florida so she could be near your brothers. But as this decline was going on, how did that, maybe even with your wife and your siblings, as you talked about, hey, what do we do now and what's next? How did that relationship maybe change or develop?
Well, we all saw it in different ways, Neil, and that was the thing that was hard for each of us to grapple with. I wasn't with my mom every day. I was living in Nashville. My brothers were with her in Florida, but they didn't even see her every day. They'd see her every week at church, and they'd go visit her and that sort of thing. So we all saw it from a different perspective. But little by little, we began to see those signs, hearing her speaking in ways that she hadn't spoken before, those outbursts of anger and that sort of thing that my mom, that would be totally uncharacteristic of my mom. We all began to share our stories and say, whoa, I've never heard mom say those words before, but that doesn't even sound like grandma, my kids used to say, but it was grandma, and of course it was the dementia speaking through her.
Well, so Ken, let me interrupt for a minute. Is that a common sign actually that anger or language? I mean, I think forgetfulness, we all sort of understand that suspicion, but is that the cursing part of the thing? Is that something that would be a sign for universal? Or?
It's not always the cursing, but that loss of the filters that somebody with Alzheimer's or dementia will say things that they would never have said before. I remember a godly pastor friend of ours who developed Alzheimer's, and this man, just a godly man like my mom, quoting scripture all the time, and he developed Alzheimer's, and I don't know where it came from, and he was a World War II veteran. He must have learned some words there somewhere during the war, because boy, every time people would stop by, he would just blitz them with profanity. This was a man that stood in the pulpit, preached about the love of Jesus all of his life. It wasn't characteristic of him, Neil. That was the dementia speaking through him. And so family members really need to understand that. Those overreactions, and the big thing I really think is important to emphasize, the filters are gone. Those filters are gone. The things that would keep you from saying that when you see that lady in the funny hat in church, you're not going to mention that hat because it's just too silly. My mom would mention it. Not only would she mention it, she'd go and ask her, why are you wearing that stupid hat? That sort of thing. And she, other things. She would get lost in church. She'd go to the bathroom and wouldn't come back for half an hour, and she'd get lost in our church and things. So my brothers and I started sharing these stories, and they all sounded so familiar. And we began to realize that it wasn't just funny anymore, that this was serious. And not only was my mom in danger to herself, but she was causing other people danger. Getting the car keys out of her hand, that was one of the toughest things we had to do. But all three of us brothers had to stand together and say, Mom, we're going to sell the car. You can have the money. We're going to give you the money for the car, but you just can't drive anymore. Oh, boy. It's just, she never let us forget that, I think, to the very day she died. Everything would come up, she'd say, well, if I only had a car, I could go by myself. I could go visit the family members. I could go to the grocery store. I could go to church more by myself if I only had a car. But, Neil, she couldn't drive. And the brothers, we had to stand together and say, Mom, we love you too much to let you hurt yourself or let you hurt somebody else. That was really important that we have a united front. We didn't understand it first, but boy, we had to pick up on it.
Well, let's talk about that. When you were, I'm interested to know how much you discussed care options or things like that with your mother in terms of maybe relocating or care options or versus deciding on your own. You and your brother said, well, here's what we need to do and here's the plan, Mom, this is what we're going to do. But how much did you interact and were there? That maybe, I suppose, it changed from season to season.
It did, and it was a progressive thing, Neil, because dementia is like that, and especially my mom had vascular dementia, which is a little different than Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's is a straight downhill slide almost from the time you get it, and it's just like straight downhill. But vascular dementia is more of a step down, and a lot of the other forms of dementia are more of a step down situation where you go along fine for a while, and my mom could function just perfectly fine for a while, and then something would happen. Maybe she'd slip and fall, or maybe there'd be an emotional outburst, and she would step down emotionally and mentally, and she never ever would go back up. Once you've gone down those steps, you never come back up those steps in dementia or Alzheimer's. So with her care had to be a progressive thing as well. At first, we moved her to a kind of an assisted living facility where she would interact with other people. My mom was social. She loved playing the piano and having other people sing along with her. She loved being in Bible studies and church situations, so we would take her with us to church all the time. So it was a progressive deal where she was interacting with people. She had her own apartment, and yet they would take their meals together. And boy, and I have to admit, you know, as a family member, you've got to plan for this kind of thing because it gets expensive. Long-term health care insurance is very, very important. If you can start looking at that anytime after a person is 60 years of age, that's a smart thing to do. We didn't do that. We were paying out of our own pockets, my brothers and I, and whatever resources my mom had, which were depleted rather quickly. So it moves from that progressive to where she's independent. And then when she fell and went into a rehab facility and that sort of thing, she never was able to come back to where she lived independently. And that was a whole different sort of situation because then once her insurance situation ran out, then we had to find someplace else for her to live. You're looking at kind of a nursing home situation. That is extremely depressing. My brothers and I would go around to different nursing homes and see the folks. And the folks that work there, God bless them. Wow, what an incredible bunch of folks who work there. Most of them are dedicated, committed to trying to help the senior citizens who are living there. There are some who rip people off. There are some people who treat them with disdain. Some people, you know, are mean to them. Some people hurt people, the senior citizens. So you have to be careful as you start looking for those kind of things. And my brothers and I would go around to these places, and we would take Mom with us. And we took her, I remember, to one place where we went in, and she saw some people who were holding on to little baby dolls. And we took my mom in with us, and boy, she recognized. My mom was already developing dementia. She was already into the downhill slide, but she recognized that these people weren't functioning as well as she was. And she pitied those ladies who were holding on to these baby dolls, holding these baby dolls up to their breasts as though they were real children. And my mom recognized that. And so we knew that wasn't the place we wanted to put her at that point because she wasn't ready for that yet. You know, the sad thing is, she eventually wound up in a situation similar to that where she was one of those ladies holding the baby doll. She was one of those ladies sitting in the wheelchair all day long in the hallway watching people going by in a blank stare. So it's a progressive thing, and boy, families have got to work together on it, and you got to be honest, and you got to say, okay, what's this going to cost? We want the very best we can get for Mom or Dad, and yet the realistic price tags sometimes can be very daunting, and you have to decide, okay, what can we do? It's foolish to break the family's budget to try to keep somebody in a higher-end facility when something else with just as good of care would be sufficient. You've got to be real with it.
Was there you discuss, you know, maybe she can live with me or our family or one of my brother's families, or maybe that was for a time? But
absolutely. Yeah, that was at first we all did that. And we thought, hey, well, now I have to in being totally honest, I have to admit most, you know, the three brothers, we liked being married. We love our wives. And, we considered that. And we said, you know what? Mom would drive us all crazy if we had her living with us. But we put her in, at first, we put her in close proximity to us. We didn't put her in the same home with us. But that's a great option. And there are 15 million people today, Alzheimer's Association estimates, who are caring for a loved one whose mental faculties are diminishing. 15 million people are caring for somebody in their homes today. And this problem is getting bigger and bigger. More people are discovering we've got to do something with Mom. We've got to do something for Dad. And so it's very real. If you can keep the loved one in your home in familiar environments, I think that's so much better. The one thing you do need to recognize, though, because of the dementia, Alzheimer's, you need to clear out the clutter. My mom, she was a collector. She was a hoarder, and that's another sign of Alzheimer's and dementia, too. People begin to collect and hoard even more. But she was naturally, even before the dementia. She had stuff everywhere. But when the dementia set in, she couldn't. She couldn't function. She couldn't walk through her own apartment. She would stumble over things. And then even the overstimulation of too many pictures on the wall, it would just drive her bonkers. And she would be stymied. She couldn't even function because the overstimulation all around her. Watching a television program was difficult for her even.
We're going to continue our discussion with Ken Abraham. He's sharing out of his personal experience, and he's written it well in a wonderful book called When Your Parent Becomes Your Child, A Journey of Faith Through My Mother's Dementia. In fact, we've got, I think, half a dozen copies, and we'd love to just pass them on to you. It'd be a wonderful resource. You'd like to join the program, You can call us at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. Ken Abraham, best-selling author, is my guest today. We'll talk more in just a moment. Stay tuned. Look forward to that day. It's that process. A friend of ours, Ed Dobson, who is dealing with ALS, he says, I'm not afraid to die. It's just the process of dying that he's not liking. And we're talking with Ken Abraham today, who has written about his mother's journey, a journey of faith through my mother's dementia, the subtitle of his book, When Your Parent Becomes Your Child. Ken's best-selling author and is former professional musician, a pastor, and he's written a number of books with high-profile guests, and I hope that you will check out some of his writings at his website, kenabrahambooks.com, kenabrahambooks.com. We're talking, though, about dementia and dealing with this mother's step down and continual demise. You had to, of course, interact with a lot of doctors and medical professionals. They don't always seem warm and friendly, as you talked about. I mean, there's you know, a lot of people that are just there. God bless them. They are really... they're gifted in care and compassion, but how could your interactions have gone better? Any advice in that area?
First of all, you're right about Neil. They don't always seem warm and friendly because they deal with it every day, and they're realists. And I wasn't being real. I was living in denial. As I said, this isn't happening to my mom. This is just, you know, she's getting old. But the first appointment, we took my mom to a geriatric doctor, and that's an important word, geriatric doctor, rather than just your family physician or an internist. The geriatric doctors understand dementia a whole lot better. We took her to a neurologist, and that was good. But the geriatric doctor recognized that this step-down process that you've mentioned was not going to get better. And the best thing he could do was to make her life comfortable for the years that God allowed her to remain with us. But I was living in denial, but literally sitting in the office with him, with my mom only a foot or two away from my wife and me, he looked at me and he said, "This is not going to get better." I wanted to punch him, Neil. Shut up, man. I mean, she's going to get better. I mean, no, she's gotten better every time she's been sick before. She's going to get better. And not only that, I'm a Christian. My mom is a Christian. We believe in God. We believe that the God who created our bodies, he can heal our bodies. And you know what, buddy? I'm not going to take that word from you as being authoritative. That's just your opinion. You're just an educated opinion. And so I just did not accept that at all. Hey, Neil, you know what? He was right. He was right, and he was a good man because he was honest in telling me I needed to prepare to deal with my mom's situation getting worse and worse and worse. And yes, we prayed for her, and yes, we were believing God to provide for her and help her, but boy, it did go downhill. The biggest thing I discovered was the difference in the geriatric doctor compared to the internist and the family physician. The family physicians wanted to keep giving her more medication. And boy, you do have to watch medications with mom and dad, especially when dementia and Alzheimer's and those kinds of things set in, because they won't remember whether they've taken their medication or not. And sometimes when they need medication, they don't take it. And sometimes when they shouldn't have any more medication, they've taken too much. You have got to step in there and take control of that medication. The doctors we found, quite honestly, were realists. They were very accurate in describing what was going to happen for us, but it wasn't until I began to accept that information as being valid that it was helpful to me.
Now let's get to a few questions from our listeners. Andrea says, we're needing to move someone right now, but all three of the children live out of state from her. Is it wise to move their mother out of her environment at this stage?
If it's possible, I think, to stay in the same environment as long as you can, I would recommend that. I think most doctors recommend that you stay in that same environment because it's familiar. And remember, your loved one is not being able to remember as many things as before, and anything familiar is good. Those family photos, don't inundate them with them. Don't, you know, surround them at every wall. But to have family photos that they can remember, things that are familiar, furniture, maybe that blanket that mom loves, having those things, if you can keep the loved one in the same environment, I would definitely do it. But just be real and say, okay, there may come a time when we need to have mom closer to us. We need to get there in 5 minutes. We need to be there for her during this time. And that may take some effort to do that.
Let's go to this line four. Talia is calling in. Mother experienced that dementia. Talia, go ahead. You're on with Ken Abraham.
Yeah, my mother was 6 years in a nursing home. And the aide had come in, and this was an aide that we knew. She came in the morning to change my mother, and my mother was kind of like a big baby at this point. But she placed her on the side of the bed and then walked away, and then she fell off and hit her head and died within, you know, 7 days. And it was pretty tragic and sad. But now we're facing it with my father, who is in assisted living. And we are trying desperately now to get him more help because we realize he's been falling so much, he needs more help. But because we have gone through all of the money, you know, my brother deposits money in the account now.
All right. But, well, Talia, we got a little feedback here on the line, I think. But Ken, that's a big issue. The funds and then the need for more help. What a strain that is.
And what Talia experienced there with the fall risk is so crucial, Neil, because there comes a point where mom or dad can't really get around like they could before. And when they fall, boy, that's when you're headed for the nursing home. That's when you're headed for the rehab facility because they can't get back on their feet like they used to, and you need help. There are financial resources available, and now is the time to start investigating that. Obviously, you'd have to investigate it when you're right in the midst of it. But if you have a parent who starts to move in this direction, you start to see these signs, start checking out. Alzheimer's Association has some wonderful resources online. They're absolutely free. You can go and take advantage of that. There are local facilities that will give you information take advantage of it now because there's going to come a time the price is going to get higher and higher and higher. A friend of mine just put his mom in a nursing home here in Nashville, Tennessee. It cost him $14,000 a month. $14,000 a month. Neil, you could buy a pretty nice house in Nashville for $14,000 a month. You know, that's a lot of money. And that's not the average. The average cost is around $4,000 to $6,000 a month. But, you know, most of us can't afford that on top of our regular budget. So you've got to start planning now. There are resources available. Government resources are available. Local resources are available. The Alzheimer's Association can help you find a lot of those.
Another call from Janine. She says, she lost her husband to Alzheimer's. And many people seek me out because of my story. She says, one of the other symptoms to mention is the loss of problem solving. So my husband is very well educated and intelligent, but he lost the ability to use critical thinking.
Oh, how tough is that? That's right. We just talked to a scientist the other day, a fellow who was a scientist all of his life and couldn't even basically figure out how to get from one room to the other in his house. It is so sad. It just breaks your heart, and you just have to say, boy, okay, this is where we are. Thank God for the great life that mom or dad had, but now we have to step in and be a parent to the parent. And that role reversal was difficult for a lot of us, Neil. I know it was for me. I mean, I found myself putting diapers on the person who wants to put diapers on me. Oh, man, it just breaks your heart. But you know what? Now's the time. Now's the time. We have an opportunity to serve our loved ones the way they served us, and they need us more than ever.
Ken Abraham has written a book about his own story with his journey of faith through his mother's dementia. The subtitle is called When Your Parent Becomes Your Child. We've got some copies to give away. We'd like to join the broadcast here at 877-93-FAITH. Ken, it brings up the point, I know you address it in the book, is about, you know, making spiritual life a priority here, not only for your mother, your parent, but for, you know, for you and your family during this time. Because there's a lot of implications here. You know, why does God allow us to suffer and all this? So talk about, you know, keeping that right spirit in the midst of it all.
Well, two things. First of all, keeping the spiritual life focus for my mom was important for us, surrounding her with Christian music, reading the scripture to her. In her final days, when I would go to the nursing home to visit her at night, I would always read the Bible to her. But before she got bad, in the early stages of dementia, we would always take her to church with us, and it was funny sometimes. And as I said, she'd get lost in the church sometimes, and a lot of the folks in our church, they would recognize, and some didn't. They'd say, you know, what's wrong with those Abrahams letting their mom run around the church like that? She was getting lost every place. But it was just so important for her to be with God's people. And I remember one of the most incredible moments of my life, Neil, was looking over at my mom. She couldn't remember whether she had breakfast this morning. She couldn't remember. She couldn't tell you where she was, probably. But I looked over at my mom in the middle of a church service, and she had her hands raised, and she had her eyes closed, and there she was in church just worshiping God. I tell you what, I mean, it just blessed me. I don't know what was going on in my mom's heart that day, but it sure was worth me going to church with her that day. And the effort it took to get her out of the house and into the car and struggling up, you know, all that, it's effort, it's work, but it's worth it. It really is worth it. But those simple things, singing the old hymns. My mom would know those old hymns by heart, as I mentioned. And it's amazing the power of music. The doctors tell us, and people who work with Alzheimer's and dementia patients all the time, they say music is one of the last things to go. And if that's true in a secular realm, how much more so is that true in the spiritual realm? And I found that to be really true with my mom. The old hymns of the church, What a Friend We Have in Jesus. I Love to Tell the Story, Victory in Jesus. Oh, boy, there are great messages in those hymns, but they would encourage her. And so we would sing them together. It doesn't matter if you sing in tune or out of key or anything like that. That doesn't matter. Just sing those old hymns with your mom, with your dad, and you will see their eyes brighten. And it's just amazing what God will do.
Well, let's do that second part of that question, because I know your mom asked the question, and I'm sure many do in her circumstance, knowing that, you know, she was suffering, said, you know, why am I still here? I love the Lord, ready to meet Jesus. Did you work through some of those why questions with her?
Oh, boy, you're not kidding. And those questions were hard for her. They were even harder for me sometimes, I think, because she would ask. And my mom was always one who embraced life. She loved every day. Every day was a new challenge, a new opportunity. So to hear her even ask those kind of questions was hard for us. To hear mom saying, why am I still alive? And even at the nursing home, I would say, well, mom, maybe there's somebody here that needs to hear about Jesus. And then she would nod her head and say, okay, I'll pray for them. And that sort of thing. It was really kind of cute. I mean, she thought she was going to have some sort of evangelistic ministry right there in the nursing home, you know, and she probably did. But that question of why am I still here? And you know what, Neil? I came to the realization that part of the reason why she was still here was not just for her. It wasn't just for the other people at the nursing home. It was for me. She had taught me how to live all of my life, and now she was teaching me how to die. And it was amazing. It really was amazing. She didn't, as you said earlier, she wasn't afraid of death. She was looking forward to seeing Jesus, and boy, she would sing those old hymns. What a day that will be when my Jesus I shall see. Wow, her eyes would brighten, and she would smile. It was incredible. So she wasn't afraid to die, but the question is, well, what am I supposed to be doing here? And boy, it used to break my heart. And sometimes at the nursing home, she'd say, well, why am I here? And then maybe I should get a job. I'm thinking, what kind of job is she going to get? A, you know, morning paper route or something? I don't know. But you know, that sense of meaning, she had to have meaning even in the dementia and the Alzheimer's. She still had to have some reason to get out of bed every morning. We all need that. And so I would try to encourage her and say, Mom, there's that other person here down the hall here that really needs to see the love of Jesus, needs to have an encouraging word today. You know, truthfully, she probably didn't remember 10 minutes later, but it would give her a sense of purpose, a sense of reason for living, and she needed that, and I needed that.
Ken Abraham is my guest. We're going to get to Kelly's call in a moment, and Jeff has a question, a comment. We're talking today about Ken's latest book called When Your Parent Becomes Your Child, A Journey of Faith Through My Mother's Dementia. It's published by Thomas Nelson. You can find out about all Ken's writings at his website, kenabrahambooks.com. We'll continue in just a moment.
Angel wandering from the fold of God, he to rescue me from danger brought me with his precious blood.
Now it's always nice just to review those wonderful old hymns and to maybe make a connection again, and we want more than anything to have that journey to be full of grace and to go smoothly, but that doesn't mean that there isn't suffering and sorrow along the way. And we're talking about Ken Abraham's a story with his mother. It's A Journey of Faith Through My Mother's Dementia, the subtitle of the book, When Your Parent Becomes Your Child. Ken's best-selling author and a musician and pastor, and is joining us today to talk a little bit about dementia. I want to get to Kelly's question, because Kelly has a good question about what to do as when we're parenting our parents. Kelly, go ahead. You're on with Ken.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My father has had vascular dementia for 19 years, and I struggle as a Christian with when when to allow him to make decisions for himself and when I override his decisions for him, and how to be respectful and loving at the same time.
Oh, Kelly, that is great. And, boy, you just hit on two great words, respectful and loving. That kind of sums it up right there. Respectful, we never are out from under the command to honor our father and our mother. And in everything that we do in this whole process, even though our parents have become our kids in a lot of ways, your parent becomes your child, the whole idea of the book, you still have to respect mom. You still have to respect your dad. And yet, at the same time, what is the loving thing to do for them? Those two words that you just said, that's the key right there. What is the loving thing to do? Is it a loving thing to allow my dad to go out and drive a car when he's a danger to himself or a danger to other people? Is it a loving thing to to allow him to handle his own medications when there's a real possibility that he may overdose on something? Or, like, for example, my mom was on Coumadin, a very familiar blood thinner. Well, if she took too much Coumadin, she could bleed out. If she even just bumped her arm or something, it would begin bleeding. So you just have to say, what is the loving thing to do? And at that point, you need to step in and do. It's hard. Boy, it's just really hard to take authority over mom and dad's decisions. You want to give them as much autonomy as possible. But at the same time, you've got to be realistic and say, for the very best care I can give mom or dad, I've got to take this away. I can't allow. My mom used to love helping in the kitchen. She used to love peeling the potatoes, taking a knife or a potato peeler. It got to the place where we couldn't allow her to do that because she would cut herself more than the potatoes. But you just have to be realistic and say, okay, step by step here, we're moving back to childhood. And I've got to recognize that I'm not dealing with the person that taught me how to drive a car anymore. Now I'm teaching the person who may be just growing up and learning even what a car is. I've got to help that person grapple with life.
And you talked about the kitchen. One of the issues you had was just kind of helping your mom make sure she was getting not only the right medication, but the right food or eating. Not eating is pretty common too, isn't it?
That's right. A lot of folks with dementia and Alzheimer's, they'll just stop eating altogether. And more as they approach the end of things, that becomes a situation that works, unfortunately, in the person's demise. It just works against them on so many levels. But the lack of an appetite or the change of appetite, those kind of things are signs to watch for, because that could be an indication of where we are in this whole process of dementia. We found too something else that was helpful. You were asking for tips earlier, Neil. One of the things that we learned quickly is that my mom could not handle, and most dementia and Alzheimer's patients cannot, they can't handle a bunch of instructions at one time. One or two instructions they could deal with, okay? Take the potatoes over to the sink. We're going to peel the potatoes. Take the potatoes over to the sink. But we couldn't give her instructions, take the potatoes over to the sink, peel the potatoes, put them in the water, put them on the sink. No, one instruction at a time she could handle, but more than that, she would get confused. And that's common with a lot of folks with dementia and Alzheimer's. Eating is something important. Sometimes you have to start mashing up the food, using a food processor. It just becomes, because you don't want them to choke, and things aren't working as well as they used to, and so you just have to be a little bit careful about those kinds of things. Watch that diet. It's important. Water intake. There's something else that is important too. It's a physical thing, Neil, but it has so many emotional ramifications, and that is touch. Especially when mom or dad are in a nursing home or an assisted care facility, unfortunately, except for the nurses and the doctors, nobody touches them. They don't touch each other. It's a strange thing. And that physical touch we all need, mom and dad need that more than ever. Put your arm around, get down in front of their eyes. Don't get off to the side because their peripheral vision isn't what it used to be. Get right in front of them so you don't scare them when you reach your hand out to touch mom or dad. Let them see you coming so that you touch them in a gentle way. But that physical touch is so important for a person with dementia and Alzheimer's.
One of the other tips you talked about was that don't argue, but change the subject. Talk a little bit more about that.
That was the key for us. That's how we survived this whole thing, I have to tell you. Because, people with dementia and Alzheimer's, they get argumentative sometimes. And it becomes a really important issue, whether it's red or blue or what we're going to do here. And, boy, it'll just drive you crazy. It is so frustrating. And mom or dad, they're just convinced that's the way it is. And you can spend a lot of time arguing. But you know what we found? That if we would just change the subject – if we would just change the subject, my mom might say something was blue or red. We'd say, you know, Mom, that's true. Have you noticed that that Alyssa is getting older and you know, she's off to college? You know, just change the subject, any subject. It doesn't matter. Just change the subject. A minute or two later, that person with dementia or Alzheimer's may not even remember the point that they were so upset about just a few minutes earlier. Changing the subject. It sounds so simple. Oh, Neil, that was a salvation point for us. It just saved our lives in so many ways.
And we had a call from Jeff who talked about, you know, really people need to look early for financial resources. But he said that in his situation, looking at moving their mother-in-law closer, but there are no places nearby that have a memory care unit. Should we move her to a non-specialized facility, or could we move her twice?
Boy, that is a tough call. The memory care unit, for folks who don't know, that's for more advanced stages of dementia, where frankly they need pretty much round-the-clock care, and they are many times in wheelchairs or can't feed themselves sometimes. They're in a more intensive kind of situation. If you're thinking in terms of intensive care, that's the memory care unit. I hated to say that with my mom. I hated to see her move into that memory care unit. So I would think if you can function without that and it's still a safe situation, I would stay there as long as I could. But there may be two moves at one point. There are some facilities now, and more are developing stages where you can bring mom or dad in when they're still able to function completely on their own, independent living, and then move into more assisted living, and then finally into a memory care unit, all in the same facility. That is wonderful if you have that option. That's something that's happening more and more. We're going to see more of that in the days ahead as so many of the baby boomers move through these years. But right now, that's not always the case, and you just have to make the best decision you can there, Jeff, and what is the safest for your parent at the time.
Yeah, and I know you were a former senior pastor, and you've written a number of books and, you know, still teaching Bible studies and all those things. So, you know, one of our listeners just wrote a note, and maybe you can talk a little bit about it, but you know, is this something where, you know, if we really were serious in prayer about it, I mean, even laying hands on our parents, that is this a spiritual warfare issue? Did you work through some of those things? I mean, you sort of touched on that when you were visiting with the doctors.
Absolutely. And that was my first impression, quite frankly. You know, whatever mom's ailments are, you know what, God can heal her. And I believe in what the Bible says. If somebody is sick, let's call the elders together. Let's anoint them with oil. Let's pray. And if they've committed sin, they'll be forgiven, and God will heal them. He will raise them up. I believe that all my life. My mom believed that, Neil. We did those things with my mom. Guess what? The dementia kept moving increasingly more and more toward her demise. This is life we're dealing with. You know what? We're not in heaven yet, but at the same time, it's a fight. And so we fought as hard and as long as we possibly could in every spiritual way, and I would recommend folks to do that. Here's the other thing, too. Pray with your mom. Pray with your dad. It was incredible what would happen to my mom's spirits whenever we would pray. And here's the other part, when she would pray for us. Wow. We were having some trouble with our teenage daughter one time, and so I asked my mom to pray for her. Neil, it was like God gave her a direct pipeline. And boy, she was just reading my daughter's mail, you know? She was just, and we had not told her what was going on in our daughter's life, but the Spirit of God working in my mom was still there. And so there's just something very, very important to maintain that spiritual aspect of this whole thing. Don't give up. And yet at the same time, we recognize this life is not all there is. And it was a marvelous thing, Neil, for us to know that the moment my mom took her last breath in Nashville, Tennessee, she was going to take her first breath on Streets of Gold in heaven with Jesus. Man, you know what? It just bolstered all of our faith just knowing that if she closed her eyes and didn't wake up, that wasn't going to be the worst thing that could ever happen. The worst thing that could happen if she closed her eyes without Jesus. My mom knew Jesus. She was looking forward to seeing him. And for us to hold on to her and say, Mom, stay here with us. Stay here. You know, please don't go. That was almost cruel on our parts. And we had to come to the place where we were willing to let her go as well.
Well, it's a great way to end our time together, and I encourage you to pick up the book if it's an area where you're dealing with maybe in your life at the moment. When Your Parent Becomes Your Child, it's a journey of faith from my mother's dementia. It's just one of those tender, poignant, well-written books, again, from Ken Abraham. I shouldn't be surprised. Ken's a New York Times bestselling author, and he's known for his collaborations with high-profile public figures like One Soldier Story, Bob Dole, and Payne Stewart, with Tracy Stewart, and Let's Roll with Lisa Beamer and many others. And Ken has written this wonderful work, and you can find out more about his writings at his website, kenabrahambooks.com. And Ken, thanks for sharing out of your life experience and offering some encouragement today. We so appreciate it.
Neil, thank you. It's a pleasure for me to be with you. And you know what? The best thing I can tell you, my mom doesn't have dementia anymore.
Amen. Amen. Yeah, that's what we're all hoping for, right?
That's right.
Yeah. All right. Some bright morning, we'll fly away. Ken Abraham, sure. Joining us here today on Connecting Faith. You may want to just share today's program with a friend or listen to it again if you missed part of it. You can go to our website. It's myfaithradio.com and just click on the Connecting Faith show page and you can get the link there and pass it on to a friend, myfaithradio.com. Thanks for listening.